Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, Text 39. Manu Bhagavata Nityam. Bhutanugraha Karikaharaha. Ritityam Sadat Ganam Vai. Varankaram Avaraninam. Nanu Bhagavata Nityam. Bhutam Nugraha Karataraha. Ritiam Saridi Gayam Vai. Varankaram Nivarinam. Na Nityam. Uttanagra Karinaha. Ittitvam Sadurat Yanavai. Rangaram Lavadinam. Lavadata. Ladies. Oh, there's more, go ahead. Anu, now, Bhagavataha, devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nityam, eternally, Bhuta Agraha Karitaha, very much anxious to bestow benedictions upon the fallen conditioned souls, Riti, accept, Twam, yourself, Shuddha Grinam, a breaker of friendship, therefore not countable among the Bhagavatas or the devotees of the Lord. Vai, indeed, Viram Karam, you create enmity of Virayanam towards persons who are not enemies. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All the devotees of the Lord, but you, are very kind to the conditioned souls and are eager to benedict them, to benefit them. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, You create enmity with people who are not your enemies, or who break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable activities, actions? Please repeat. All the devotees of the Lord. But you are very kind to the conditioned souls and are eager to benefit the others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies or who break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable actions? Purport. Such are the criticisms that must be borne by the servants of Narada Muni in disciplic succession. Although the Krishna consciousness movement, through the Krishna consciousness movement, we are trying to train young people to become devotees and return home back to Godhead by following rigid regulative principles. But our service is appreciated neither in India nor abroad in the Western countries, where we are endeavoring to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. In India, the caste brahmanas have become enemies of the Krishna consciousness movement because we elevate foreigners who are supposed to be malechas and yavanas to the position of brahmanas. We train them in austerities and penances and recognize them as brahmanas by awarding them sacred threads. Thus, the caste brahmanas of India are very displeased by our activities in the Western world. In the West also, the parents of the young people who join the movement have also become enemies. We have no business creating enemies, but the process is such that non-devotees will always be inimical towards us. Nevertheless, as stated in the Shastras, a devotee should be both tolerant and merciful. Devotees engaged in preaching should be prepared to be accused by ignorant persons. And yet, they must be very merciful to the fallen conditioned souls. If one can execute his duty in disciplic succession of Narada Muni, his service will be surely recognized, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:68-69. Yaidam parama kutyam madhuvesu abhutyate bhutyam mayi param kripya mam evasyati asamsayaha nanchai tasman manushesu tasyanme priya kritiyamam pravita nachami tatmad anud priyatrato buri. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed. At the end, he will come back to me. There is no servant in the world more dear to me than he, nor will there be ever one more dear. Let us continue preaching the message of Lord Krishna and not be afraid of enemies. Our only duty is to satisfy the Lord by this preaching, which will be accepted as service by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. We must sincerely serve the Lord and not be deterred by so-called enemies. In this verse, the word Sridhya Driham, a breaker of friendship, is used because Narada Muni and the servants of his disciplic succession disrupt friendship and family life. They are sometimes accused of being Sarubgriham, creators of enmity between relatives. Actually, such devotees are friends of every living entity. Sri Bhutanam. But they are misunderstood to be enemies. Preaching can be a difficult, thankless task, but a preacher must follow the orders of the Supreme Lord and be unafraid of materialistic persons. So Srila Prabhupada is the later day Narada Muni, because this curse that he had, he passed on to his loving sannyasis, and they were cursed also to travel and preach and be having no home. And so this benediction is something that passes on to practically all of us. No matter where we are, we're always engaged in preaching. And so our preaching activities are compared to what was criticized by this great unfortunately, all these things that we're hearing so much is very demoniac. But what can be done? It's part of the Bhagavatam. And the reason, I don't know if you know the reason behind all this, why Narada Muni stayed. Anybody know why he stayed and listened to all this? Yeah, you read ahead, so you guys, I'm not going to listen to that. So what happened was that he stayed because he wanted to see if he would repent, that he was going out with his accusations and screaming and yelling and cursing. But the reason he stayed was so that he could actually dispel that and bring out all the anger and purify it and then ultimately see if there's any repentance. And I don't think that really happened exactly. So as the movement goes on and our society grows, there was a period of time when actually we had these deprogrammers were like, you know, very heavy in our society in the early years. Ted Patrick and company were on TV and opposed by different devotees, just absolutely washed them away. The man was very ignorant, but he was getting big money. And one of my friends, Dhanadhara Maharaj, was one who got deprogrammed, or supposedly, but he escaped finally. But their technique was to eradicate anything that a trace of your spiritual life, to have you curse the name, the holy name, force you to eat meat, and do everything nonsensical that would deter you from your Krishna consciousness. And so we in the West, of course, were, you know, spared by most of this. My parents died long before I had a chance to explain about devotional service. And in my family, nobody asked any questions. They just say, okay, you're doing what you're doing, that's fine, we appreciate it. But ultimately, don't tell us anything. We don't want to change our mechanism, our meat-eating intoxication. So generally, the whole material world is subjected to these vices, and it's hard to break it through, like Prabhupada is saying. So if we can do that, if we can actually find a means by which we can break through, and ultimately, it's a benediction for everybody. And it comes in different ways. For me, it's in terms of painting and sculpture and architecture and developing. I'm involved here. Oh, by the way, my name is Rascal Das, and Bhakti Sonata Das, and I was given this name. It's a funny story. But in any case, I'm here working with the TLVP, and so I'll be here for some years. And the work is, I think, is almost endless, because in the three levels inside the building, there's dioramas that stretch out for at least 2 or 3 kilometers. So it's a wonderful opportunity to perform devotional service, and the preaching that takes place is something that's far-reaching. For example, when we were in FATE in the early days in Los Angeles, I created 3 versions of the change of body display. The first one was a small unit, and Robert came through the diorama facility, and Bhardwaj, who's here now, he says, Srila Prabhupada, would you like this for your room? Change in body. And so the Prabhupada answered in 2 words that summed up the whole philosophy. My room? He didn't have any rooms. I mean, like he was saying, Pavakacharya, there's no space that he can call his own. So that curse is something that's a great benediction. Narada Muni really appreciated it, that now he could travel and he's the spaceman for the entire creation. And so Prabhupada also, his arms are still reaching, far reaching, and the movement is growing, you know, rapidly around the world. So Prabhupada was very pleased that he knew that actually some time would come that this would continue, and even beyond his lifespan, that it would continue. One of his favorite sannyasis, Madhavisa, I asked him, how is it you got so close to Prabhupada and you got so much mercy? He says, well, I saw what Prabhupada wanted. I saw what he needed. He needed more devotees and more temples, so that's what I did. And then I was able to correspond with him all the time. And finally he was able to take sannyas. All his friends were taking, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was taking. And so he said, Srila Prabhupada, I'd like to take also. So he gave his danda. He says, here, I hope you can maintain it. And so it was like that. Prabhupada needed generals that were able to go out there and fight. So he, amongst a whole bevy of these Pravakacharyas, were sent out preaching all over the world. And so many wonderful stories that come out of it. Like Dhanajaya started a Rome temple, and when he was in the presence of Prabhupada, Prabhupada's plate came out, and so there was all this pakoras. He said, "Oh boy, I got pakoras, man. I'm going to go after this." And so he took the pakora plate, all of it, downstairs in the basement of that Rome temple. It was dark, and so he ate them all fast. Ate all the pakoras. And so it turned out they were like hot chili pakoras. And so it just started coming out of his ears, steam coming out of his eyes, nose, mouth. It was like fire. He was breathing fire. So the lesson to be learned is that when there's maha available, you know, take a little bit. Be careful of the chilies, man. Those are the tiger sharks. So as our movement grows and grows, I got some references here, that we are in probably the most exciting stage of our Krishna consciousness movement. Because here, it's growing to the rate that it's a quantum leap. And Prabhupada made some mentions, and I don't know if you ever heard this, but he said that our movement will be taking over the world, and it'll happen within the course of these upcoming years. So we have 10,000 years of glorious time to look forward to. And but he said, don't think that you shall come back and keep coming back to preach. No, it's like a bathroom here. Just get in, do your business, get out. So don't think about coming here in next life and, oh, I'll be born again in a nice family. I was talking with Tejas in Vrindavan. We had this 40-year reunion. He's thinking, well, I'll come back and I'll be born in a nice family. I'll be able to preach and I'll be able to satisfy some of the desires that Prabhupada wanted. I couldn't do this life. I said, no, get out of that mentality, man. Don't come back here. Don't have any hesitation. Just get out. And so in terms of success in preaching is that we have this opportunity to do it in this life and do as much as you possibly can. And for me, that's pure devotional service. If we can use our hands, our mind, our mentality, our body, everything in service of the Lord to the fullest degree that is humanly possible. In other words, extracting the most out of each day. And you get up early, chant your rounds, you know, come to the temple. I've been in Vrindavan the last 37, 38 years. Just after Prabhupada left, I started and I kept the service going, serving Radha Shamasundar. And every day was totally different. And each day, the first day was like a mind-blowing experience, and it never ended. I made some mistakes in the very first day, and ultimately it took me 37 years. I still haven't completed the atonement. But it's the way Krishna grabs us and just holds us so that we don't leave devotional service, that we may be committing some small offense. Especially be careful of, you know, Vaishnava aparadha. Ultimately, that's totally devastating. And there were devotees who cursed each other. Now the thread, when you take that thread out and you start going after somebody, I mean, be very careful because there's a danger there. Because you might bounce it back, and it might be hitting a mirror and it come back on you. So these devotees cursed each other and they both fell down. So there's potency within this thread that we wear, but not to be used in cursing, because ultimately that brings the end of spiritual life. So there's one point that when Daksha lost all his sons the first time, he didn't say much, 10,000 sons. Imagine having 10,000 sons and suddenly they're all gone off and becoming, you know, sadhus and taking them to this, like, which will become later the Krishna consciousness movement. And so he lost 10,000 the first time. Okay, so he was a gentleman. He said, I'm not going to argue about it. Narada Muni did what he did. But now he's done it again. Now this time 11,000. And so now what am I supposed to do? And so it goes on with this tirade and this cursing. I mean, it's almost offensive just to repeat it, but ultimately we're immune to that, to Bhagavatam. So as the movement goes on, and ultimately I think the deprogrammers are pretty much stopped, but there'll be times by which we think that ultimately we're supposed to be immune to the austerities and the dependences that are, like, you know, locked in on us. You know, some devotees are able to handle that more than others. There's one devotee who who, my hero, he performed the greatest Apostian austerity. He fell into a dark, blind hole and ultimately came out paralyzed, and ultimately it took him years to recuperate, but the penance and austerity he went through, I remember seeing him on the bed when he couldn't move at all. I won't mention who his name is, but now he's walking around carrying weights on his legs, the strength in his legs, but he's my hero. So he got me yesterday, and I got him today. These person in this Prabhakacharya category should be kind, tolerant, merciful, peaceful, and certainly we have that in some of our devotees here, especially the twins. We can't be glorified enough, but their austerities and over the years, and they're always my heroes. Now, what happened after the 11,000 took off, and then the next step is there was 60 daughters, and Daksha had freedom here, so he could keep the daughters. Nardamuni didn't touch the ladies, so ladies are immune to this Prabhakacharya business, so you can settle, have children, be happy, never have to worry about leaving and preaching all over the world. But if you want to do that, ultimately you have that opportunity. But his daughters, all 60, were given to different great sages. Dharmaraj got 10 daughters. Kashyapa, he got 17. Chandra, the moon god, got 27. Now, out of those people, I'll just list some of the things that came out of those marriages. And the mind-boggling. Upendra came, the personality of Godhead. Vishwakarma, Sarupa, Bhuta. Bhuta was one of the sons. One that came from the... Well, Sarup was the wife. And from that marriage with Bhuta, 10 million Rudras. Then another wife from the same Bhuta had all the ghosts and gobhoblins. And Kashyapa's wives created birds, locusts, Garuda, and 60,000 bad sons who caused havoc in the universe. So the list goes on. Arun, chariot driver of Surya, and serpents came from Kashyapa's wives. Moon god, water entities. Then ferocious animals, tigers and lions and eagles, buffaloes, cows, vultures, and angels. So all these came out of these wives. Now, who in our movement has given birth to anything like that? I mean, I see a lot of babies floating around, and this place is very prolific in terms of generation of new souls. But nothing like what's going on here. Now, I'm going to switch to another topic, and that's about Gadadhar Pandit and his life and his austerities. Now, a lot of it is left out because Gadadhar Pandit, of course, we know as Radharani, or in the flavor of Rukmini, that and also a secret that came out of Sridhar Maharaj, who was told by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, that actually the offspring of Gadadhar is none other than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in Srup Damodar, we have in the presence of Gorkishore. So these are little innuendos that came out from the words of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And so in the early days when Gadadhar was always very affectionate, very sincere, quiet, you know, kind of recluse, and he didn't join with his master until he was 13. So he was born in a very, very sandy, dry place, and it's part of the character of our Gadadhar Pandit, because he's born on a dark moon, which is today, and he's also disappears on a dark moon, and nothing more than just energy that passes on, because he's a vessel that's drained all the time. And when he was in the service of working and being growing up with Lord Chaitanya, he was always the butt of jokes, and Lord Chaitanya was always teasing him, like in the same mode that Krishna teases the gopis and Radharani, and just, you know, and actually the separation that happened when Krishna would leave the arena and Radharani's in a veil of tears. And so the same thing, Gadadhar was left standing on the banks of the Ganga when Lord Chaitanya decided to go to Vrindavan. And so the intensity, the love, the great depth of this goes in so deep that it's mentioned that he has the first love of Lord Chaitanya. Then it comes into Shrub Damodar, and then there's a whole line of love takers. Then it goes into different kinds of love, with Advaita, with Nityananda, and Sachi, and everybody around Lord Chaitanya. But in terms of intimate love, it's Gadadhar Pandit. And so, being that he's Radharani, and they grew up together, and they're going to the same school, and as children, they were sporting together, and they were living very close to one another. So his intimate pastimes with Lord Chaitanya were the most intimate than anyone had. And so he was so close that when Lord Chaitanya came back, I think it came back from Gaya after his new experience, that he said, "Where is Krishna? Where can I find Shyamasundar?" And he said, "Gadadhar Pandit, it's in your heart." So he started tearing open his heart. And he's tearing at it like Hanuman did, you know. And so he said, no, it's okay. He's going to be here any minute now. And so Sachimata's watching this and seeing it. Okay, this is the person that's going to take care of my Nimai. And so it happened that Sachi said, "You always be with Nimai and always make sure you're protecting him because you're the protective force." And that really was his position. And then later when there was one exchange in a forest that Gadadhar Pandit collected forest flowers and Lord Chaitanya sitting at the roots of a tree. And so he garlanded Lord Chaitanya with the flowers, just as Radharani would do in Krishna Leela. And so that was happening. And then finally they all sat together. Panchatattva were there. And so he sat Gadadhar Pandit right to his side. And so like you see always Krishna with Radharani on his side. And so in that place, then they were worshipped by Advaita, by Srivas, and the whole entourage was all making prayers and glorifying the two of them. So then he came to a point where he rounded up or left his niche, his pastimes in Gaudiya and here in Navadvipa. And so off he goes to Puri by the blessing of his mother. And so soon Gadadhar was given the assignment, or he installed the deities at Topa Gopinath, apparently. And so he was the head pujari, and he maintained the deities, and he had Chetra Sannyas. That meant he couldn't leave those deities ever. And so that's the incident that took place when he wanted to follow Lord Chaitanya back to Vrindavan. He couldn't leave. And so inside that, if you've been, how many have been to that place, Topa Gopinath's? Well, it's a good selection. Most people have. So it's a very intimate little place. And there the Panchatattva would meet. And there Lord Chaitanya would sit there and listen to the relishing, the pastimes of Radha Krishna, and listening to Bhagavatam. Now, can you imagine sitting in that assembly with the Panchatattva and Gadadhar Pandit, Radharani, speaking about the glories of the Bhagavatam and talking about the intimate pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya would go there. And he would go there continually. Every day this was going on for long periods of time. And so then he would go back to Gambira and just bounce off the walls. I mean, just meditating on the verses that he heard and what Gadadhar Pandit was explaining, the intimate understanding. And why is there a Gadadhar Pandit and why did he come? It's because Lord Chaitanya is looking for that ras. He's trying to extract as much. He's done it already. He's taken everything he could from Gadadhar Pandit. And he did it in the last incarnation with Krishna taken from Radharani. And so again, it leaves Gadadhar Pandit void, empty, a shell, a vessel that it just has to be refilled again. And so, of course, Gadadhar Pandit is the master of all masters. And so there's no problem refilling that empty vessel. And so it comes again and again. But there's Lord Chaitanya extracting it. It's like milking a cow. And so whenever there was nectar, Lord Chaitanya got it. So when that was happening with the Bhagavatam recitals, he would go to Gambira and bounce off the walls and relish it, and then body would expand and contract, goes to the ocean, gets fished up. And so all these pastimes took place. So when it came time for Lord Chaitanya to leave, of course, he's 48 years old, very young, and 1534. And so Gadadhar Pandit is a year younger. He's 47 when this took place. Now, when it took place, you can imagine the separation pain that he went through when the departure of Lord Chaitanya happened. And so it was 11 months later that he departed. But in the interim, when those 11 months were taking place, he aged greatly because he couldn't even stand up the garland Todagopinath. Sorry. So Todagopinath had to kneel down, and that's the way he is today. He's in a kneeling position. And then where Lord Chaitanya entered, his garments were left outside. So inside is where he entered into the right knee of Todagopinath. There's a crack there. That's a golden little spot. He entered. That was the end. And so Gadadhar Pandit just aged and aged, and so 11 months later, he leaves. And so then it's a time when they... Oh, I want to mention about the meeting that took place. Mukunda Datta and Gadadhar Pandit meeting Pundarik Vidyaniti. So if you know the story, that Pundarik Vidyaniti was very aristocratic and had he had a hookah, he had, you know, a spittoon for his pond, he had, you know, paraphernalia all around, he had vases full of flowers, he had his sheets of satin, he had a very opulent bedspread, and so his whole demeanor was very elegant and very materialistic. And so Gadadhar Pandit saw that, he just, oh my God, what am I looking at? Has this guy got anything spiritual about him? And so then, Mukunda Datta, understanding the whole situation, he started reciting verses on Krishna from Bhagavatam. And as soon as he heard that, you know, Pundarik Vidyaniti just smashed everything. He rolled on the floor, tore away his garlands, his clothes. He just, you know, decimated the whole place. And so then, again, then he understood that this person is just more than what he shows on the surface. And so Gadadhar Pandit immediately figured out, the only way I can rectify my error, is that I got to take initiation from this person. So here's Radharani asking to be initiated by this personality. So this is, what a disciple. And so he said that, when he says, I want to take initiation from him, he says, wow, I've never had a chance, maybe a lifetime, to have a disciple like you. Okay, no problem. So he did, he initiated him. And so that became a very amazing story. And whenever Ishwar Puri was in town, both Nimai, and both of the two were always at together. So so when they had the chance to meet with Ishwar Pandit, they listened to all his discourses, and he got the breast of the knowledge that was given to him, given to the two of them. And so then, there's another wonderful little pastime that takes place. His name, Sukalambar Brahmachari. They're talking outside the house, and so Lord Chaitanya is starting to go into ecstatic trance, and he's starting to lose it again. And so then, inside of Gadadhar Pandit, he just sat inside and was kind of, you know, hiding. And so he's listening to these pastimes, and he's like being blown away. And so, pardon my American expressions, but he was actually, you know, losing it drastically. And so he's crying, and as Lord Chaitanya outside is going through it, he's crying and losing it. And so, now who's inside crying like that? There's got to be somebody that's deeply involved and understands in the philosophy. And so he came out, and they embraced, and ultimately another big exchange took place. So who can even imagine? Like when Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan, the animals, everybody followed him. It was like Krishna again coming to Vrindavan. And so when the two, Gadadhar Pandit and Lord Chaitanya embraced, it was like, you know, it was like going back to the previous Leela. So the degree, it's immeasurable, the amount of love, the amount of exchange that took place between the two of them, that ultimately those Bhagavatam classes must have been outrageous, you know. And so He served Tata Gopinath for his tenure, and then ultimately he passed away in separation of Lord Chaitanya. So he dark moon, he appears and disappears, and then what is left after Krishna steals Radharani's bhav? There's only thing left is Gadadhar Pandit, which is the shell of the effulgence, or the remnants of what is there remaining from that, after that theft. The biggest thief of all is Lord Chaitanya and Krishna. He's stealing everybody's heart. So I see T-shirts everywhere. My heart has been stolen. No, my heart has been left in Vrindavan. I don't see many about losing your heart in Mayapur, because it's a good place to lose your heart. So he made an attempt to always stay as close as he could with Lord Chaitanya. And then when Gadadhar Pandit had a brother, Vininath, and his son, Vininath's son, actually took Diksha from Gadadhar Pandit. And it's interesting that Nityananda, he left 7 years later after Lord Chaitanya, and Advaita 16 years. But Gadadhar Pandit, he left that next year, 11 months later. Then there's another Gadadhar Das Thakur, who is one of the associates of Lord Chaitanya at that time. He's considered the luster of Srimati Radharani. And so, not to be confused, he's the one that went to the Qazi and told the Qazi, you know, you have to chant the holy name. He says, you have to chant Hari. And he says, well, I'll chant Hari tomorrow. He says, well, you chanted already once, that's enough. And so, Hari, Hari Bol. Oh, that brings another story. So there's a Hari Bol story. When Prabhupada was offering puja to his spiritual master in Atlanta, Georgia, he's offering the water, conch shell. So he's offering it, and then he says, bowl, bowl. You need a bowl to put the water in. Bowl! So Rupanuga and the other group of devotees, Hari Bol, Hari Bol! And they went up in ecstasy and dancing and Prabhupada. Malecha's Yavanas, what can you expect? And so there's so many, I'm going to break into some Prabhupada stories if you don't mind, because I'm full of it. I made one book called Acharya, and in that book there's all these pastimes of Prabhupada, and some unusual stories that maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't. But a lot of these mystical experiences that were not in Lilamrita, and Sastra purposely avoided putting anything too controversial. Well, my book came out with everything mystical and everything controversial, the whole book. So it's available. I'm not selling the book, but it just happened to be available right here. In any case, one of the stories, that Prabhupada in L.A., one devotee's looking through the keyhole and seeing if Prabhupada is okay. So when he looked in, this is Prabhupada's servant saying, I saw Prabhupada in this crystal body with diamond eyes and effulgence. He's shining. There's self-illuminated. There's no light, but there's a light surrounding Prabhupada. And then he backed off, and he just came back later to check and see again what's going on. So he looked again. This time Prabhupada's rolling on the floor all by himself. He's rolling around on the floor. And so the devotee asked Prabhupada later, he says, Srila Prabhupada, I didn't want to bother you, but I saw you rolling on the floor. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I was just wrestling with Balaram. Can you imagine that? Wrestling with Balaram. And he's in the very early days in Jhansi. He had this garland. It was a Kadamba flower garland. It was full of big aromatic Kadamba flowers. And the smell was so wonderful. It just went on forever. And so this first disciple, Pavkacharya, or whatever his name was, he said to Prabhupada, where'd you get that garland? There's no Kadamba flowers like that here. So Krishna gave it to me, and I started to go for his feet, and he disappeared, and I couldn't hold it after that. So he just kind of just started crying, bouncing off the walls, playing Radanga. Couldn't hold it back. And so there's... There's a monkey story that in Vrindavan, in Prabhupada's room, maybe you heard the story, but it's so funny, that Prabhupada is inside his room and he's speaking through the bars to a monkey outside. Prabhupada is speaking to the monkey and the monkey is speaking back. And so there's conversations going on between Prabhupada and the monkey. Now, Jamuna happens to be right outside listening to the whole conversation. Of course, she couldn't understand the gist of the whole operation there. So later she asked, Prabhupada, you were talking to the monkey, and the monkey could understand. Yeah, what did he want? He wanted to know when prasad would be ready. And so, you know, and he sent the monkey off. You were a Goswami your last life. Now, you're taking this birth, but don't worry. This is your last birth. You go back home, back to Godhead. In terms of this text that we just read, that about the caste Goswamis, it still goes on in Vrindavan. That you know, there's always these caste Goswamis who are like looking down their nose on the devotees. And when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had his that's 1936. There was a festival that took place, and they went around on Braj Parikrama, one of the first ones. And so I was very close to Prabhupada's godbrother, Ban Maharaj, who later became very inimical. He was always on that direction. Prabhupada wanted land across the street so he could put in a goshala or expand a little bit the preaching. So he had huge acreage there across the street from the Krishna Balaram temple. And so when Prabhupada presented the idea, then he just said, okay, we have to go. And so he left with the devotees, and when he got in the car to go back to the temple, he says, if Lord Chaitanya himself had come here and asked for land, he would not get enough to put a pin on. And so he says, my godbrother is like, I can criticize it, but you can't. In any case, I got to work with him a little bit, and he talked about stories where he was preaching in England, and he was dressed in his Nehru jacket and leather shoes, and Sika was gone, and ultimately, there was some problem about his Vaishnav behavior. And so he says, well, listen, the British, he saw pictures, he showed me pictures of him talking to all the elite. You know, there's two kinds of devotees and audiences also. The very elite who want Pratista, and those devotees who are a little more sedate and like Godar Pandit, who is very the emblem of being a perfect devotee. And so from that side came a group of people who were like, you know, aristocratic Englishmen and women. And so they said, listen, if you want to get anywhere with this preaching about your movement, better go to Germany. And so so he did that, because in Germany he started preaching at the Berlin University about the Aryan race. Now the Aryan race, as you remember, Hitler was very prominently, you know, pushing the Aryan civilization. But they were the German Aryan race. So Goebbels happened to be talking to this Ban Maharaj in the hallway, and so down the hallway was Hitler running back and forth. So he couldn't get a chance to talk to Hitler because of there was a shortage of time. There was a big thing coming up. Goebbels told Ban Maharaj, you better go back to India right now. And by the way, we're the Aryans, not you. You know, we're Germans, fair-haired, you know, blue-eyed Germans, we're the Aryan race. You go back to India right now, because there's going to be some problem. And so a month or so later, they invaded Poland, and the war started. And so I happened to be with Ban Maharaj, and I was his architect for a while, designing that land that he had. And so he wanted the streets to be named after different gods. And so ultimately, he had a big plan for that property. Then he turns around and gives it to the government. The governor of UP came, he just gave it to him lock, stock, and barrel. He lost the whole thing. So he never had a chance to even use the land. And then one day, he was sick and he was in bed most of the time, but then he got up. He's sitting under a picture of his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He started chastising Prabhupada. And so we just left and walked away from the whole thing. I never saw him again. He wanted me to sharpen up the murti. He had a murti already made in marble for his samadhi. So he wanted me to, you know, make it a little more realistic. I never did it. I did so many murtis of different gurus because I asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I said, is this okay? Would Prabhupada be happy with this? that I'm making murtis of different bogus yogis. Sorry. And he says, well, he says, the money you're making, I was getting good money for it, for each, I do the head, and ultimately, it had different bodies, and I had a body shop. It was like a car automobile service station, but I had bodies and heads and put it all together. And so I'd make these murtis, and then ultimately it spread out. I kept doing this. I couldn't get away from it. But Tamal says, because you're doing this and you're getting so much money from the bogey yogis, Prabhupada would be very happy. And so it pushed me on to keep doing more. Then I did one of this saint that now in Vrindavan, they've got a big, huge, what's it called, Prem Mandir. So I would call him a Creepy Louie, as Creepa Lou Maharaj. I don't want to make any offense here, but he had some real mystic cities. And part of that mystic process that he had, he'd be sitting there, I'm making a murti of him, and next to him, he's sitting next to the murti. I step back and look at it, by the time I get back to it, he's already changed his body. He expanded and he can contract his body. So he made it impossible to do the murti. But finally I got it done, and so then all of his people came and they wanted to destroy it, because ultimately if you make a murti of someone while they're still alive, it could be the end of the person you're representing. And then I was given a chance to make the first murti of Prabhupada in fate. In any case, I made drawings of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada is looking that way, giving a class. So I'm on his side looking at his profile. And so I'm making a drawing, and I used to be pretty good at it. So I looked at Prabhupada and I make the drawing. I look up, totally different. Prabhupada's face, the mood, the change, the shape, the color, everything was a kaleidoscope. Every time I look up, his face would be totally different. So he was playing a game with me. I tried so hard to do it, and I couldn't get any few lines down. And I gave it up. So next day I tried again, it was worse. And Prabhupada looked over me, his smile. And so he played games with us. You know, it was so much fun that Prabhupada had such a sense of pleasure. And ultimately, that's my remembrance of Prabhupada, that he was such a delightful personality. And everything about Prabhupada was that kind of an energy. That I got room for maybe one more story, and then we'll wrap it up. And so, when Prabhupada came to the doll studio, he came over, or we were making the dioramas, and fate was in full swing. So he came, and I kept lamenting. I never get a chance to get near Prabhupada. I'm always in the back. And so this time, well, I'm going to try to push forward. And as I was thinking that, or I get up on a chair and see over the heads of everyone, suddenly it opened up like, you know, Moses in the Red Sea, and here was Prabhupada face to face. Anybody had that experience? I guess not. And so in any case, if you're face to face with Prabhupada, you're face to face with destiny. It could be either your death or your liberation or something in between. And so I felt a whole complete cleanse, like a scourge. Everything just dissolved right out of my body. And so it happened so fast. He was just walking by. So Prabhupada had that ability. Eye contact, you got to be very careful when you contact your eyes with Prabhupada's eyes. I think even photographs, it's still prominent. And your life is going to change. So be very careful when you look at Prabhupada, because your life may never be the same again. Mine changed completely. And so Prabhupada walked through the diorama display really fast, and I told Bhardwaj, who's here, I got to tell him the story, he doesn't remember, that Prabhupada looked at the diorama first, maybe about 10 seconds, and walked over to a door. He opened that door. Now, we had hidden all our junk piled up outside in a space outside. We went around it for the tour. But Prabhupada went right to that door. He says, open the door. And you couldn't say no. So Prabhupada, we opened the door, and there was all the junk outside. All our nartas piled up 20 feet high. I said, Bhardwaj, I told you. He's got to see it. And so ultimately, he says, paint that wall, fix this. Then he came to the tool room where I was in control. And so I had all the tools fixed nicely and painted, and you know, lines around the tool so you knew where the hammer was if somebody lost any tool. Because the people, you got to be conscious of what's in your hands. If you're not conscious of that, whether we're cooking or cleaning pots, whatever we may be doing, if we're conscious about our hands, what we do, you know, physically, then ultimately Krishna consciousness can develop. So it's got to start there. So Prabhupada, he reinforced that. He looked at the tour more than any of the dioramas. He wanted to know, what's that tool for? We had a lathe, make Tulsi beads there. Then he came outside, and he looked, and there was a diorama of himself made by Lochan. And so he had a rubber head, Prabhupada. He had a rod inside the head and a motor underneath. So when he flicked the switch, the motor turned and raised the rod, and the head moved up. And so Prabhupada's head was looking at Prabhupada, and there's a big, huge smile. This big famous photograph of Prabhupada smiling in response to that head moving. And so it was a younger version of himself. And so then he came over to the dioramas that I was working, this change in body display. And that's when he said this thing about, you know, my room, because it was right there in front of him. He didn't know, have to know he wasn't his body, or he's, the body's going to change. And ultimately, when he did leave, I was in the room when he left, and ultimately he said that, you know, don't think it doesn't going to happen to you. And right up to the very last, he was translating, and just amazing how he had that stamina. But for my eyes, he never lost any of the power. Prabhupada was powerful right to the very last words. The body was fading away. There was hardly any body left. But the strength and energy Prabhupada had, he knew everything that was going on at every moment right to the very, very end. And ultimately, when he left, it was like the whole movement changed. It was a mission, then became more of an institution. And so now we are in that later date. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. I think we got time for a couple questions. Anybody want to know about Prabhupada a little bit? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Haribo.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.